go to Catherine Robertson, who talks books for us on a regular basis. And Catherine's, I think, in our Wellington studio. Hi, Catherine.
Kia ora.
Can I share an email I just got?
Yeah.
Dear Jesse, the Booker Prize this year is an act of cowardice, a bob each way driven by commercial saleability and ignoring the real literature that is Lucy Ellman's Ducks Newburyport. There should be a steward's inquiry, says Peter on email.
That's very interesting. I'm a big fan of Ducks Newburyport myself.
Yeah, so tell us what happened this morning.
Well, the Booker Prize was awarded to two novels. As far as I know, that is the only time that it has happened. So it was awarded to Margaret Atwood for The Testaments and Bernardine Evarista for Girl, Woman, Other, which neither of which I've read, but Girl, Woman, Other is on my bedside table waiting to be read once I get through Ducks Newburyport, which is 1,000 pages long.
Now, apparently it's happened twice before.
Oh, has it? Wow.
But the last time was in 1992 when The English Patient tied with Sacred Hunger.
Oh,
and
I didn't
so
know
they,
that.
Yeah, they changed the rules to say that there could only be one winner. But
there can be only one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the judges stubbornly held out this year and said, no, we're not picking one, which I must admit I feel a bit like our emailer, like, come on, guys, get off the fence.
I think, yeah, I think you I think somebody should have had the honour of winning it, you know, for themselves. And so, I don't know, I mean, I think if I was Bernardine, I'd be feeling slightly put out because, I mean, Margaret's already won that, well, she won it for the Blind Assassin, didn't she, and, about, what, 20 years ago or so. Mm. So, you know, and people are talking about Bernardine Evarista being the first woman of colour. Of course, that's not entirely true because Carrie Hume won it.
Yeah, I saw someone else point that out.
Yeah. They might have forgotten. But, yeah, I didn't know that that had been awarded twice before.
Okay. But you think maybe Margaret Atwood, you know, should be like our Link 3 competition on a Thursday. Once you've won the vinyl LP once, you can't put your hand up again.
That's probably slightly unfair, but yeah. I think the judges.
But in the event of a tie,
the judges should have gone. Come on, yeah, somebody needs to win this.
Must be hard to judge a literary competition. Do you ever do it?
I've only done it for residencies, for applications for residencies, and I've done that twice, and that was quite good fun.
Yeah.
And fortunately, all of us agreed on the judging panel. Mm-hmm. We were completely unanimous in both cases, so that made it very easy. But I did listen to Rick Jakovsky once talk about being a judge on the Booker Prize, which awarded it to John Banville. And if you ever read about, you know, I think he wrote for The Guardian as well about that process, and that is quite hilarious, actually, how he turned them all around, the entire jury, to The Sea by John Banville.
Yeah, because I've twice been the judge for a stand-up comedy competition, and the other judges on the panel didn't really see eye to eye, and but I didn't have the necessary charisma to turn them around. I think they all ended up hating me.
Well, I think in the two residencies that I sort of judged, they had very good criteria forms. That you had to give a mark out of whatever and, mm-hmm. and a justification. So all the reasoning, et cetera, was very transparent. Fortunately, we all came up with the same things. But if we hadn't, we could have looked and gone, right, okay, how do we feel about this point where we differ?
So tell us about this this other book that wasn't a winner, but which has taken Peter, our emailer's fancy, and that you're partway through as well.
Yes, I am just over partway through. That is Ducks Newburyport by Lucy Ellman. She's an American, but she's lived in Scotland for some time. It is a 1,000-page, one-sentence internal monologue. it is when we say that, it's slightly misleading. So the internal monologue part of it is one sentence, but it's broken up. Not that often, but throughout the text, by a story about a female mountain lion looking after her cubs.
Yeah.
And now the woman whose internal monologue is she's sort of, I hesitate to use the word housewife, but she's a mother who works at home making pies. That's how she earns a living. She sells them to cafes. She's got four kids, one by a previous marriage. And she just talks about her concerns. And about her kids, about her past, memories, about Trump, about open carry, all these sort of things, guns, and then everything, absolutely everything is in this book. And the mountain lion is the complete opposite of her. The mountain lion knows exactly who she is, what she's in the, you know, on the world for, what she's doing is a female in total control, and the woman in the monologue is not. But she's delightful. And that's the thing. I mean, once you get into it, when I first started it, I went, oh no, I can't. I just can't do this. And then after a while, themes start to repeat themselves. Her memories start to repeat themselves, not in a sort of horribly repetitive way, but in a way that makes you suddenly more familiar with them. And I absolutely love it. But it does require a lot of effort, and it requires focus. So I'm taking my time to read it in short bursts. Somebody said, how do I know? Because it's just every page is just full of text. There are no paragraph breaks or anything like that. There's no dialogue. So it's just a solid text on every single page. And somebody said, oh, how do you find your place? And I said, I actually just read to the end of the page, and then I mark it, and I know that I'm on the end of the page, and that's it. So just keep going from there. It seems to work.
Would it be fair to say that when you, Catherine Robertson, says she's going to talk about a book which is 1,000 pages in one sentence, sort of stream of consciousness, there would be two sorts of people listening.
Yes.
One group of people would be like, no thanks, and another group that would be, oh, that sounds experimental and fascinating, and I'd love to see what they do with that.
Well, I think my sort of feeling about books is it's a bit like the thing about the weather, you know, that people say that there's no such thing as bad weather, there's just unsuitable clothing. I don't think there's any such thing as a book, you know, when you get to past a certain quality of writing, I don't think there's a bad book. I think there's just books that you are not willing to read.
Yeah.
Or that you don't, you know, you don't want to read. And I mean, everybody's got to read what they like, but I'm very happy to read a Lee Child or, you know, a more commercial fiction, straightforward narrative book. And I'm very happy to read something like Duck's Newburyport and see what I think of it. But you can't go into it. I mean, there's a John Updike wrote a whole bunch of rules for book critics, for reviewers. And one of them, which I've sort of try and abide by, is figure out what the intent of the writer was and review the book on the merits of whether they actually managed to pull that off or not. So don't review a book, and I think don't read a book, sort of resenting that it's not the book you want it to be or would prefer it to be or you think it ought to be. You read the book for what it is. And if you don't want to read that type of book, then just give up and just go, that is not the type of book for me. But it's not the book's fault. I'm not saying it's your fault as a reader, but I'm saying that you have to go into a book like Duck's Newburyport understanding what the intent of the writer is and knowing what kind of reading experience it is going to be.
Should you feel bad about yourself if you choose the Lee Child for a holiday instead of this one?
Absolutely not.
You should
not.
Really, eh?
No, no.
It means you're not as good a person as the one reading the experimental novel.
No, I just think it's, you know, it's taste is absolutely up to every single person, you know, whatever your taste is
to put in. Is it immoral to cut out the cover of Duck's Newburyport and sellotape it to the front of a Lee Child novel for you to read around the pool? It's not really.
Except that you'd actually have to tape it to about 3 Lee Child books.
Yeah.
And because it's like each one of those is about 300 pages.
Yeah, 1,000 pages is a big read, eh?
It is a big read. But I mean, I read Milkman, which won last year's Booker Prize, which was, an experimental novel by Anna Burns. And I actually read this fantastic statistic the other day because some people look at the effect of prizes on book sales. Take a guess at how much Anna Burns' sales increased when she won the Booker Prize.
I'm going to say 2 times as many.
400,008%.
Wow.
I know. That's just astonishing. Yeah. And but, I mean, Milkman, again, I had a book token. I went into Unity and Tilly Lloyd said to me, because I said, what do you help me out, so many books. And she said, do you like wordplay? Do you like playing with language, et cetera? And I said, that's totally my wheelhouse. Love it. And he said, she handed me Milkman. And she was right. It is for somebody who loves playing with language. It's for word nerds. You know, so Duck's Newburyport is for trivia hounds. And that's why I love it, because I recognise things in that, which I go, ooh, I know what that is.
What do you mean, trivia hounds?
Well, because the Duck's Newburyport just covers so much ground, there's so many references to all sorts of things. And if you, when you spot them, you kind of have that little frisson of, I know what it means. Like, for instance, she references a woman called Irma Rombauer quite often. And Irma Rombauer wrote a book called The Joy of Cooking, which was what the absolute sort of Bible of American cooking in the 50s. My mother had a copy of that because she lived in the States for 10 years. So I know about Irma Rombauer, but a lot of people wouldn't. And I just like, it's just fun. I just know what that, you know, what that's like. So
would you like to read us a bit of that book?
Oh, about Ducks in your report. Go on.
Just,
I'll do
just
this.
Read us a sentence that might take
you just more. Have to sort of, you know, I'd love to do it in an American accent, but I can't. It's like, the fact that open carry type guys are always quoting from the Bible and you get tired of hearing it all. The fact that can't they read something else once in a while, like Barbara or something, or maybe some Jane Austen. The fact that Jane Austen died 200 years ago and I'll be 50 someday, half a century. Dexter and Uxbridge, Cook, Cock, Pickle. The fact that there's the bus at last. The fact that I don't know why I always have to find everybody's hat and scarf for them. Run, run, sheesh, doolally-ally, doohickey, rinky-dink, the rights of nature. The fact that now they're all gone, we can get a little peace around here. Mm. It's like that. The whole way.
Reminds me of a bit of James Joyce, Ulysses.
Well, I mean, Ulysses is an experimental novel. Mrs. Dalloway is an experimental novel. Again, they're sort of like that internal
monologue. And they're both internal,
Yep. And you've got to...
And word sounds as well, right?
Yep. Word sounds and so...
Cook, cock, pickle.
Yeah, she does word association. You know, there's one page where I think she lists about 50 different types of pie. And it's kind of fascinating. But... Okay. It's not something you go into for a kind of narrative arc and that sort of, you know, experience that you'd expect from a more commercial book.
Before you go, did you Walter Abish?
Oh, Walter Abish, I love that. I was going to hope to throw that in. I was just sort of saying about mad experimental novels. I mean, you know, James Joyce, Virginia Woolf, Lucy Ellman and Anna Burns are doing novels that kind of, you know, they fit in the contemporary world and you can, you know, they're experimental but they're still understandable. Mm. Whereas Walter Abish wrote a novel called Alphabetical Africa in which every chapter contains only words starting with a corresponding letter of the alphabet. So chapter one is Africa again. Albert arrives, alive and arguing about African art and also, alas, attacking African architecture. And apparently it goes right through to Z and then it goes back. I don't know how he did this.
Love it. Okay. Catherine, thank you very much. I love talking to you on the show. Really appreciate your time today, and thanks so much for coming in.
And yay, Peter, do ducks.
Yeah, Catherine Robertson, who's been talking books inspired by the Booker Prize winners.